There are so many things I want to say, but time and your patience won't permit me. I can either talk really fast or try to hit the high points. I hope you can hang in with me for another 15 minutes or so. Let me first talk about Dr. Malinger and his notes. I want you to remember the testimony in terms of what the purpose of those sessions were, why Tony Czarnik was seeing Dr. Malinger, what Dr. Malinger was interested in. He told you he was interested in how Tony Czarnik was feeling personally, how he was doing on his medication. Dr. Czarnik told you he was seeing Dr. Malinger for treatment of a mental illness. That's the purpose for the notes. That reflects how he was feeling personally. Dr. Malinger wasn't interested in what role he was playing at Illumina, what tasks were taken away from you at Illumina, how do you see yourself as a CSO. Those weren't what Dr. Malinger was interested in talking about. That's not what Czarnik was interested in talking about. Now, with respect to the whistleblowing, first of all, Kevin Gunderson's testimony. You recall what Kevin Gunderson said? I'm sure you recall. If you don't, I take Miss Kearns up on her offer. Check the transcript. He was talking about the experiment that happened in summer of 2000. He said he could draw no conclusions from that experiment with respect to the number of bead types. He said he left for vacation the same day Mark Chi sent his email. I drew that connection when Kevin Gunderson was on the stand. He talked about the experiment that happened in the summer of 2000 during the roadshow. Kevin Gunderson told you what he thought about that experiment. The problem with the experiment was the dye was mixed. It's so fundamental. I was thinking of a cute little way to phrase it. If the dye ain't right, I couldn't think of another.
What about if the glove don't fit?
That's what got me. I couldn't get thinking in rhyme. But the dye was wrong and the experiment was flawed. Dr. Czarnik is an expert in fluorescent tags. They told you that, he told you that. This is his area. So his belief, Dr. Gunderson's belief, other people's belief that the dye screwed up this experiment is certainly reasonable. Illumina seems to be taking the position that, hey, we got some useful information from this experiment. Wasn't totally useless. They are essentially telling you this experiment was good enough. Was this experiment good enough? Not if you are trying to raise $100 million of investor money. Then the experiment was not good enough. I agree with Miss Kearns. Investors don't understand science. I barely understood it, having worked with the case. I'm sure you are struggling with it. The fact that the public doesn't really understand the science, the fact that you may not fully understand the science, the fact that investors don't fully understand the science, that's why we have whistleblowing statutes and laws. That's why it's important for us, for a scientist like Dr. Czarnik, to speak up, because he understands the science and investors don't. So that's why we have whistleblowing. To safeguard the investor public in situations like this, where he knows the science, he knows it's wrong, and he knows investors wouldn't fully understand it. Miss Kearns showed you the September 5th email, that code blue email Dr. Czarnik sent the day that he was fired. That wasn't the only time Dr. Czarnik made noises about this. You've heard other testimony about things that happened earlier in the case. Miss Kearns questioned why did he send the email on September 5th. Why did he ask Mark Chi, did you inform Jay Flatley about this problem? Dr. Czarnik explained that to you. He did it because the previous workday, September 1st, Jay Flatley made a presentation where he, for the first time, acknowledged the coding was a problem in the company and that they were going to form a workforce, a task force, rather, on decoding. So finally, Jay Flatley was acknowledging that there was a problem, and that's why he sent out an email on September 5th, the next workday. Now, let me say a few words about the goals again, especially that second goal, binary oligo encoding. This was a different method of decoding. I think you know that by now. This was Dr. Czarnik's invention. He invented this area of binary oligo encoding. He told you that the project that Gali Steinberg described, or rather that David Barker described, that wasn't the same project as his invention. That wasn't binary oligo encoding. Gali Steinberg, Miss Kearns said in the opening statement, that Gali Steinberg had had her baby. She had already had her baby. We've been here going on a month now. Presumably she had her baby 4 or 5 weeks ago. She was never brought in to testify.
She works at Illumina. She could have come in and explained the experiment. She didn't. They didn't bring her in here for a reason. But again, this was Dr. Zarnik's invention, binary oligo encoding. You know, we are dealing with some very smart people on the other side. Jay Flatley told you he was Phi Beta Kappa. John Stuopnagel told you he was top 2% in his class. Mark Chi is obviously a bright guy. David Barker is a bright guy. These are smart people. I'd submit to you, what better way to set up somebody if you are setting them up for failure? What better way to set up Dr. Zarnik than give him goals in an area that he invented? That's what they did in this case. In terms of adding grant writing, I mentioned they added grant writing as a third goal. I didn't say, or I didn't mean to say, that Dr. Zarnik said his breakdown was caused by the grant writing. What I meant to say is that Illumina believed that. Illumina saw him break down over grant writing. Illumina thought he detested grant writing. So their state of mind was, he broke down on this once. He detests grant writing. Let's throw this in on top of all the other goals, including the experimental goals that we included. Miss Kearns, she thanked me. I accepted her thanks for showing this exhibit. This exhibit is exhibit 223, page 33. She says this proves Dr. Zarnik resigned. I hope I don't have to convince you that Dr. Zarnik never resigned. If I do, I'll speak to that. It just doesn't make any sense. He wouldn't have quit, just walked out and resigned, leaving no stock, leaving all his stock on the table. You heard that when they offered him 3 months' stock, 3 months' salary, he said no. When they offered him 6 months' stock and salary, he said no. When they offered him 9 months' stock and salary, he said no. Yet they want you to believe at some point he said, I quit. I'm walking out. I'm leaving all my stock here. It didn't happen. But even according to Jay Flatley and Illumina, and Miss Kearns repeated it in her closing, the so-called resignation happened in March. March of 2000. We're talking about, and he allegedly made the resignation and then withdrew his resignation. That's what's in the termination memo. He resigned back in March and then withdrew his resignation. This is in May of 2000, when this lawyer is saying we need to revise this to reflect Zarnik and Pytalewski's terminations. This is in May, not in March, when that alleged resignation took place. How did that lawyer get that information? I was very careful to ask Jay Flatley because I knew he had this authority. Who is the only person who had authority to make these termination decisions? He said me, Jay Flatley. He was the only one authorized to terminate in May of 2000. Reasonable inference is this could only have come from Mr. Flatley. Ladies and gentlemen, I submit to you that Jay Flatley and Illumina are not being straight with you. Just not being straight with you. Remember this? Receipt for lunch in November, November 4th of 1999. I still haven't heard anything that happened in the first 2 weeks that was allegedly the first 2 weeks of Mr. Flatley's employment that would cause him to tell a board member, I've got performance problems with Zarnik and I'm considering changes. Check the record. Every single thing that Jay Flatley said he was concerned about with respect to performance, everything, happened after November 4th of 99. Nothing related to performance. I submit they haven't been straight with you with respect to this Larry Bach lunch. They haven't been straight with you with respect to what this means, the termination in May of 2000. Haven't been straight with you with respect to what Mr. Flatley said to Tony Zarnik. Do they work on a script? Miss Kearns and Mr. Flatley work on a script of what to say? Miss Kearns is a good lawyer. I presume Mr. Flatley would take her advice. Yet he denies. He told you, I never said anything about decoding. It's the first line on the script. He wasn't just talking about what happened on September 5th, the day of termination. Miss Kearns just showed you that code blue email dated September 5th. She said he was making that up. Mr. Flatley's notes say that Dr. Zarnik expressed strong opinions in the last few days prior to the termination, not just on the day of termination. Miss Kearns talked about the financial interest Tony Zarnik has at stake here, and obviously he does. This trial, we want to win. We want you to award significant damages. But again, remember, he passed on several lucrative severance offers when he was working at the company because he wanted to stay. Talk about financial interest. Jay Flatley held about 1 million shares in Illumina. David Walt had, I believe he said, 1,400,000 shares. That's a huge financial interest. On the day Jay Flatley fired Tony Czarnik, he had about 1 million shares, and the stock on that day was trading at over $40 a share. That's some significant financial interest. Let's take a look at Exhibit, I believe, use this board. This is Mr. Brinig's economic loss calculation. It's Exhibit 380. I want to make a few points about it. I want you to recall, if you would, the defense expert, Michael Ward, essentially agreed with Scenario 1. He essentially agreed that bottom line number is an accurate number if you assume that Dr. Czarnik would still be working there and would work there in the future, but for his termination. He agreed these were proper assumptions for Mr. Brinig to make. Mr. Ward basically said this number is correct. On the other hand, he was instructed by Ms. Kearns only to calculate damages out for 6 months. There's no basis for that assumption if you find, and I think you should, that Dr. Czarnik was wrongfully fired, and that there weren't legitimate reasons for his termination. There's no reason to think he wouldn't still be there today. It's a public company. He would be vesting 6,600 shares a month. He'd be crazy to leave once the company went public, once the company hit it big. He wanted to stay there and invest and vest his shares. There's one question on the verdict form I want to bring to your attention, and it's the last question. Last, but certainly not least. This is a very, very important question on what you would give due consideration to. It's essentially asking if you answer yes to some of the previous questions and you find liability, do you find by clear and convincing evidence that Illumina acted with malice, fraud, or oppression toward Dr. Czarnik? It's a very important question. These terms, malice, fraud, and oppression, are going to be defined for you by the judge. I urge you, ladies and gentlemen, to find that Illumina acted maliciously toward Dr. Czarnik and answer yes to that question. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a system of laws in place to prevent Tony Czarnik from experiencing what he did at Illumina. We have laws prohibiting discrimination. These laws are supposed to prevent employers from making assumptions about people with mental illness. They're supposed to prevent employers from taking away job responsibilities from employees because they are perceived as likely to crack under pressure. We have laws in place to protect people like Dr. Czarnik. We have laws to protect people who complain about discrimination. Whether or not actual discrimination occurred, as I say, is legally irrelevant. If you find Dr. Czarnik made a good faith complaint of discrimination and he was retaliated against, you are obligated to find in his favor. And we have laws to prevent employers from retaliating against employees who blow the whistle on bad science. It's up to you, ladies and gentlemen, to uphold these laws and to apply each of them to the facts of this case. And I ask that you return a verdict in favor of the plaintiff, Tony Czarnik. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Pantone. If I could see counsel in the hall briefly about scheduling, we'll take our noon recess at this time. We'll be in recess until 1:15. Remember the admonition not to form or express any opinions about the case, not to discuss the case. We'll be in recess till 1:15. The jury instructions, I'm not sure exactly how long they will take, probably 45 minutes. And then you'll begin your deliberations, 1:15. See you at that time. One thing I want to discuss with counsel I just thought of, this question about asking for transcripts. Generally, what I tell the jury is that there are no transcripts, but they have the reporter's notes. But for example, closing arguments, they haven't been reduced to transcripts.
I didn't bring it up.
Always urge them to try to rely on their independent recollection. I think I'll just say not all the testimony has been reduced to transcripts. Actually, if it came to something that was in a transcript, I don't know if you'd stipulate it's in the transcript. Would you stipulate to that? How do you want to handle this?
I'd like to deal with it as it arises.
Okay, I'm going to kind of discourage them. I'll tell them not everything's been reduced to transcripts. So if you could try to agree then, I'll see you at 1. So if you could try to agree then, I'll see you at 1 o'clock to resolve the disagreements.